Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, March 18th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's listening today, whether you're listening live or listening through the archives. As we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people and using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered in my over 46 years of living life and doing therapy. These tools are gratefully available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter of that book is a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect in my life for over 16 years to improve the quality of my life, manage my emotions, and turn any negative emotion into an infallible guidance system or part of my infallible guidance system. And we encourage people to go there and read that chapter of that book. And then you can also click on a link that lets you download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file download. Print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, Forgiveness. And as you finish typing the word forgiveness or begin typing that word, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will give you access to a completely free and private app. It contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we encourage people to do that soon and often, because when they do, it most likely will generate some questions. And then we're here 2 hours, 5 days a week to answer those questions. Or you can email us. Email Jeannie at J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org. Or you can email me at T-J-H at mindshifters-academy.org. And we will do our best to entertain those questions, talk about them on the show. If you're not able to be here live on the show, they'll be available in the archives after the show. So, that's what we're encouraging people to do and why we're here. And we're also making good so far on the commitment this year to do the Course in Miracles lessons from the workbook of the Course in Miracles. And since today is the 77th day of the year, there's a lesson about miracles from the Course in Miracles. Shouldn't surprise anybody that sooner or later the Course in Miracles would begin talking about something related to the title of the book. And today's lesson simply reads, I am entitled to miracles. Many of us in this culture are not raised to think that way or believe that. And yet, we are assured in this work that we are entitled to miracles. The commentary reads, you are entitled to miracles because of what you are. Not who you are and not something special you've done to earn them and not if you fill out all of the requirements. You are entitled to miracles because of what you are. It goes on to say, you will receive miracles because of what the Creator is. And you will offer miracles because you are one with all of creation. Again, how simple is salvation? It is merely a statement of your true identity. It is this that we will celebrate today. Your claim to miracles does not lie in your illusions about yourself. It does not depend on any magical powers you have ascribed to yourself, nor on any of the rituals you have devised. Your claim to miracles is inherent in the truth of what you are. It is implicit in what the Creator is. It is insured in your very creation and guaranteed by the laws of creation. Today we will claim the miracles which are your right, since they belong to you. You have been promised full release from the world you made. You have been assured that the kingdom of all creation is within you and can never be lost. We ask no more than what belongs to us in truth. Today, however, we will also make sure that we will not content ourselves with any less. Begin the longer practice periods by telling yourself quite confidently that you are entitled to miracles. Closing your eyes, remind yourself that you are asking only for what is rightfully yours. Remind yourself also that miracles are never taken from one and given to another, and that in asking for your rights, you are upholding the rights of everyone. Miracles do not obey the laws of this world. They merely follow from the laws of creation. After this brief introductory phase, wait quietly for the assurance that your request is granted. You have asked for the salvation of the world and for your own. You have requested that you be given the means by which this is accomplished. You cannot fail to be assured in this. You are but asking that the will of God be done. In doing this, you do not really ask for anything. You state a fact that cannot be denied. The Holy Spirit cannot but assure you that your request is granted. The fact that you accepted it must be so. There is no room for doubt and uncertainty today. We are asking a real question at last. The answer is a simple statement of a simple fact. You will receive the assurance that you seek. Our shorter practice periods will be frequent and will also be devoted to a reminder of the simple fact. Tell yourself this often today. I am entitled to miracles. Ask for them whenever a situation arises in which they are called for. You will recognize these situations, and since you are not relying on yourself to find the miracle, you are fully entitled to receive it whenever you ask. Remember also not to be satisfied with less than the perfect answer. Be quick to tell yourself, should you be tempted, I will not trade miracles for grievances. I want only what belongs to me. God has established miracles as my right. Now, as I read this, as I become tuned into this lesson, I think about all the people who will ask for a miracle and have an idea in their mind about what that miracle needs to look like and how it should unfold. And I am prompted to say, drop that. Cancel any goal, any desire you have for the miracle to unfold in the way that your mind tells you. Because your mind cannot understand the complexities of creation. Our minds as people cannot even begin to understand the complexities of our world and the one mind. We're part of it. We get access to its wisdom when we ask. But one of the keys to allowing miracles to unfold in my life is for me to understand that what my thought tells me about how the miracle should unfold is nothing compared to the flow of creation as it unfolds. So, you know, if I take this to the next level and I bring in a work like Byron Katie's work and I say, I can know that what's happening right now is an answer to my request for a miracle because it is happening. And I may not be able to see how this is a request or an answer to my request for a miracle, and yet it is. And if I just accept that life as it unfolds is the miracle, and I cancel what my mind wants to tell me about how this is bad or wrong as it's unfolding, I will be shown in the fullness of time as I perceive it, miracles upon miracles unfolding in my life. Essentially what's happening is when that happens, I get my, Emerson would say, my bloated nothingness out of the way. I get my conscious logical thought constructions out of the way. And I understand the magic of life, the miracle of life unfolding in, through, as, and around me is always happening. And any time I'm not seeing it, it's because I'm blocking my ability to have true perception in that moment. So Pam Grout's book, Course in Miracles Experiment, Chapter 77, is titled, Reality is a Mental Construct. Make yours joyful. She quotes Buckminster Fuller as saying, we are fully imprisoned by the terms in which we have been conducted to think. We are powerfully imprisoned by the terms in which we have been conducted to think. Buckminster Fuller. Pam writes, when you were born, you were powerfully connected to a rich, deep world, a world of magic and enchantment. You could do anything. But then your parents got a hold of you. And they told you things like, it's wrong to speak your mind. It's crazy to talk to angels. It's ridiculous to think you could be a painter. Why did we believe them? I don't know. Lesson 77 says, I am entitled to miracles. That says, I'm not here to just get by. I'm here to create the good, the beautiful, and the holy. I'm here to dance, to spread love, to give birth to the very best that's inside me. Those dysfunctional families everyone loves to go on and on about, we can heal them. The poverty, the homelessness, the greed that pervades our culture, we can change that. We have that kind of power, but we have forgotten. We've squandered our power on meaningless things. We've bartered it for security. We've wasted it by not trusting it. Miracles are my birthright, my destiny. Just like I can talk, clap, and drive to the nearest Quick Trip, I'm capable of performing miracles. This is a guarantee, ensured in my creation, implicit in the laws of the universe. Now, every time I read that section from Pam's book, A Course in Miracles Experiment, I think I probably would change some of those angles or perspectives, because Pam's talking here about me performing miracles. And I don't think it's quite the way it happens. I think life itself is the miracle, and I am being lived, and that those things are happening in, through, as, and around me, not necessarily by me. So there you have it. There's A Course in Miracles Experiment, Lesson 77. There's Day 77, Course in Miracles. And we have 42 minutes left to do some conversing, questioning. What's on your mind? How can we support you today? Our call in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. And we can have a conversation about anything that's on your mind and anything that's been on the topic or the table for topics in the past 10 years on Mindshifters Radio. We can talk about relationships. We can talk about any topic that Michael Rice has talked about, or Jeannie's talked about, or I've talked about in the past 10 years. There are some pretty intense conversations going on in the second hour of Mindshifter Radio yesterday and the day before. If you have comments or questions about any of that, feel free to give us a call, 563-999-3581. Area code 541, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Dr. Tim, it's Julie from Oregon. I really appreciate your...
Julie, is this Julie who's in Ashland or no longer in Ashland?
No longer in Ashland, but nearby. I'm in Ashland in this moment, but I moved to the next town up. But I have
Medford?
A request. There's two more towns between. So there's Talent and then Phoenix. I'm in Phoenix, Oregon, which
okay.
is right next to Medford. Yeah. Hi, and long time no speak. But I was reading The Course of Love, and I wanted to go over a section with you, but I don't have my book with me today, but so I want to make an appointment with you. Maybe for tomorrow I'll be with my book. It's in the third treatise. The one about the personal self. I think it's the second treatise now, but the first chapter. It might be the third treatise. I'm losing my memory in this moment. So anyway, it's just a couple of pages, and the last two paragraphs talk about Yeshua giving us a task that I think sounds like the work we do with Michael Rice, only it's in different wording, but very definitely this work that needs to be done about emptying our unconscious from unconscious driving goals and all of that. And so I was wanting your take on it, because I think, you know, only because I have the eyes to see and the ears to hear from having done Michael Rice's work, I'm seeing and hearing that. And I'm just wondering if I might be reading more into it and yet hoping that there is the same message.
You're talking about the second treatise.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the title of the chapter?
It's something about the personal self. It's two things. False representation and true representation. I think that's it.
All right, so it's the third treatise then, and it's chapter one is titled True and False Representation. Chapter two is titled The Purpose of Representation, and chapter three is The True Self. Where do you think you're going to find the material that's most relevant? In the first chapter, True and False Representation?
First. That's all I've read so far. I'm in a study group with it, but it's my second time through. I just think this is the treatise, actually, that points out the work that's to be done. And a lot of what the book teaches also is unlearning and stopping learning the way that we have learned in the past. But you know, none of that book really talks about the removal of anything unlike love and the forgiveness actual process. But I think there's a hint of it in that chapter. And I'd appreciate if you want to read it now, that's fine. I was going to call back tomorrow when I actually had my book. But I've been wanting to do this for about 2 weeks. So I just had to get in the queue with you.
Well, the chapter one in the third treatise starts out with the title being True and False Representation. And it says the personal self exists as the self you present to others. This is the only way in which the personal self will continue to exist following the completion and the integration of this course. Previously, the personal self that you presented to others represented an ego self who you believed yourself to be. Now the ego has been separated from the personal self so that you may claim your personal self again and present to others a true representation of who you are. So what this is saying is that if you've worked through the course of love, you've seen the false nature of your egoic self and how you've used it to try and pretend you are a certain way. And once you see through the false nature of it, it reminds me of a section that Michael Rice says when he was reading The Course in Miracles. It just put him into a kind of a halfway between this world and some other world state that he was in for days. And it had to do with the idea that once you awaken to the truth, it kind of separates you from the world of the falseness and the ego and the conscious logical mind. And then you will return to that world of illusion and falseness, not because you think it's true, but you will return there to bring some sense of the truth you're now in touch with to those other beings of brilliance and light who may not have awakened to it. So you will bring your light of awareness and your understanding of the true nature of us as human beings into the world of illusion. This is what that first paragraph reminds me of. The idea is before beginning a course in love and or a course in miracles, we walk around thinking that what we've been trained to think and do and be from our parents and our culture is our true self. But the great spiritual teachings are trying to wake us up to the fact that we are so much more, and we're capable of tapping into and experiencing, not through our senses, not through sight and sound and touch and taste, but through our experience and our spiritual faculties of perception, true perception, we are capable of experiencing an entirely different level of actuality. And what this first paragraph of that third treatise says, chapter one of that third treatise says, is after you've seen the completely false nature of the ego self, who you believe yourself to be, now you've separated that false ego self from your personal self. And now you can present a personal self as a true representation of who you are, you can present that to others. So you can authentically be in the world but not of the world once you've become aware of how you are not just your ego self. And you are not mm-hmm. just the image of the personal self that you show to others.
Right. So that's good news, you know, because I think a lot of people reading the Course in Miracles get the idea that they're going to have to disappear the ego entirely and disappear themselves, and it feels so unknown to have the courage to do that. But this is saying that there is an integrated personal self aligned with the true self that can walk in the world. I like how you put that. And so, and it's a good chapter if you want to read it all, or just skip maybe to the last two paragraphs, because in there I hear him saying, because the rest of the chapter, a lot of the inner text goes into all kinds of examples about old self and new personal self, which is fine. It's really good. It's really well written.
Well, it says,
have you enjoyed this?
The last two paragraphs are to become a whole self, and that's capital S, whole self, with no parts hidden. A capital S self with, in truth, no parts. This is the task that I set before you, and I'm here to help you fulfill. I can do this because I accomplish this both in life and in all time and time beyond time, making you, along with me, the accomplished. As has already been said, the accomplishment of capital S self is the Christ mind. Your remembrance of the Christ self has established the ego self and allows us to begin the lessons of the personal self. We could not begin the curriculum here because you would have been unable. Without the lessons of this course, you would have been unable to distinguish the personal self from the ego self. There is a danger even now in focusing upon the lower S self of the body, as this lowercase S self has been so long bound to the ego self. Even with the ego once and finally vanquished or integrated properly, the patterns of the ego's thought system remain to be undone. This is the atonement. We work now to correct the errors of the past in the present, the only place where such work can be done. We work with what we have, a form fully able to represent the truth, and in so doing, we bring the truth to life and life to the truth. Now, a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. Julie, you were saying something about how there doesn't seem to be anything in here about removing the false, and that's all this is about, is removing the false. Seeing false as the false. Seeing the truth as parading around as the false, and seeing the truth as the truth. That's what this is all about.
That's right. So there's still some undoing to do. And that's
not
what
some.
Michael Rice's process. Yeah, that's
right,
getting
but
the brain
some.
Cells a lot.
That
what?
The whole thing is undoing. You know, you talked
yeah.
earlier about how something about people being fearful that they're going to lose their whole self or dismantle, and that's the actuality. Right. There's the story about the man who was made of salt and he wanted to become one with the universe. And so the teacher said, okay, come over here and put your foot in the water. So the man who's made of salt goes over to the edge of the ocean and puts his foot in, and he pulls it out and his toes are missing, and he goes, What trickery are you up to? And the master says, nothing. You wanted to be one with all it is. Walk in the ocean. And the man who's made of salt said, no, it's destroying me. I want to be there in the all that is. And that's not going to happen. It reminds me of Guy Finley, who tells the story that his teacher, Vernon Howard, used to tell him, you know, come on, Guy, you keep talking about who you want to get to heaven and you want to be enlightened. And his teacher, Vernon Howard, said to him, Guy, what kind of heaven would it be if you're there?
Oh,
it would be a
yeah.
hell, truth be told. You know, if Tim Hayes right now walked into heaven, he would ruin it. Why? Because he's going to take all of his baggage. He's going to take all of his pain and fear and sadness about losing his ego and, you know, all of his bad jokes about how he can't even grow hair. He's going to take all that stuff into heaven and pollute it.
Mm-hmm.
The essence is that the mind that conceptualizes these things is false. It's
mm-hmm.
programming. It's reflex.
Mm-hmm.
The mind that tells us who we think we are is false. This is why there's so much depth of experience to be had if you engage in something like the reality management worksheet process or the Byron Katie work, because it has you questioning and giving up everything you think you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
only when that actually been done and questioned all the way to its root, is there the possibility that something bigger, deeper, better, broader, beyond words, expansive, can take its place in our experience?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
trusting...
there is that you are going to be demolished. You are going to be obliterated. You are going to be dismantled, top to
mm-hmm.
bottom, inside out. Who you think you are is going to go missing, and that's a good thing. But my egoic mind can't even conceptualize that as being a good thing, which is why even in this book, The Course of Love, it says, if we had presented this first chapter of the third treatise in the beginning, it wouldn't make any sense to you, and or you would go running. So, you know, here you are, Julie, encouraging us to, you know, dive into this book at this third chapter of the first chapter of the third treatise, and it's really not going to be much use for the people who are just starting to do spiritual work, because it's gibberish and it's going to feel threatening, and you know, the difference between the capital S self and the small s self isn't going to have any meaning besides, you know, the mental gymnastics. But the only true meaning that has any value between the capital S self and the lowercase s self is an experience I have for which there are no words.
Hmm.
And what this mm-hmm. Course of Love is trying to tell you is, in order for these words that are typed out in this chapter to have any value, you have to have worked through the Course of Love, all of it, to get to that point. And by working through, we mean having an experience of your energetic system, of your thought process, of your physical body, of your spiritual experience, existence, that you haven't had before picking up A Course of Love and being with it, reading it, experiencing it.
Mm-hmm.
We are mostly trapped in what Michael Rice would call the non-being mind. And one of the biggest traps of the non-being mind is, I'm going to figure it out. And what most of us do with a book like this is we get stuck in the, I'm going to figure it out, or I'm going to memorize it so I can prove to other people how I know it better than they do. And then
mm-hmm.
this powerful tool for transformation has become a weapon against myself if I use it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I will never enlighten anyone, and no one will ever enlighten me. Enlightenment is not a thing that happens to somebody. It's an in-the-moment awareness. It's not a degree that I earn and then it's mine. I love the way these different teachers who've had some glimpse at it talk about it. Are you enlightened? People ask them, are you enlightened? The really bright teachers say, how would I know? How would I know if I'm enlightened? What does that even mean? What value is it to you to find out if I'm enlightened or not? If somebody tells you I'm enlightened, does that mean you're going to follow what I say? Oh, that's a real trap for you. Because people who have reached that state of awareness understand everybody must come to that on their own. And it's about an experience. It's about a present moment experience. It's not about a statue you get at an award show.
Yeah. Well, thank you for reading it and sharing it.
I'm not sure that I answered any kind of a question you had about that, so I'll take a breath here.
That's
and
okay.
What was your question? Why were you suggesting we bring that up?
Well, first of all, I do appreciate what was expressed through you. So it did answer any question I had because it went to where the question behind the question was, I suppose, you know, that, you know, I asked you to address this chapter because I respect you and how you answer questions. So I'm feeling good about it. I guess if you want me to define it a little bit, I could. I guess my concern was, I guess it's maybe more of a statement of congruence between all that I've studied in my life, which I'm guided on my path to have more and more of these experiences you were speaking of. And so having come, you know, I have a certain loyalty to Michael Rice's teaching, a preference. I came from the Course in Miracles and then Michael Rice, and then the Course of Love. That was my what do you call that? Consecutive order. There's another word. Chronological. Yeah. So I see everything that Yeshua has been teaching us and the worksheets that Michael Rice came up, the reality management worksheet, to guide us always back to the truth of who we are. And this course, the Course of Love, is talking about a personal self, and as you put it, and I agree, is the one we walk in the world with. But we have the ability to build the brain cells to walk as the truth of who we are in the world. And I just love that it's being furthered in this Course of Love book. And it's not about time even, really. It's about, you know, like sequence or when it's just when we're ready to hear, we're ripe for that lesson, that opening. And I'm happy to see the integration of these bodies of work. And I brought it to you because you do integrate so many bodies of work. I do appreciate that about your hour on the show. So I just thought it's not hidden, but you have to have the eyes to see in those last two paragraphs. You have to maybe heard it before a little bit here and there.
All right. Well, I would I thank you for those comments. I would share with you that the huge red flashing lights, screaming warning sirens go off in my head when I hear you say that you have a loyalty to anybody's work.
I know. I knew that would happen. Sorry. Oh, I know.
No need to apologize. I'm just sharing with you that, you know, that is as big a trap as any on the planet. And, and you know, if you think your guru is enlightened, you are in danger.
Well, let me just say the channel that I've been able to develop in myself to be the one who receives it directly. Yeah. I've just, you know,
loyalty to anything, loyalty to a school of thought, loyalty to a person, loyalty to a procedure, loyalty to a belief is a trap.
Yeah.
So just be aware that, and some would say, and I'm not here to debate that with them, but some would say it's a necessary step as I move from, you know, the complete enslavement of my mental, emotional conditioning and my family pattern. It's necessary that I have a guru or I have a religion or I have a... Some would say that's a necessary step, and they will acknowledge that it's a step or a tool that I'll eventually have to put down to move forward. But just thought I'd highlight that because my... You know, if you're into superhero movies, my spidey senses were tingling. somebody writes in the chat room, if you think your guru is enlightened, ask their partner. One of my favorite teachers used to say in a book I read of his, I'm so tired of these people telling me that their guru is enlightened. He said, now I tell people, if you want to demonstrate to yourself or to me that your guru is enlightened, just let's book it a week with us living at their parents' house. And we'll find out who's enlightened quick enough.
Okay. Well, I sometimes need to watch my words because I keep from limiting myself. I just use the tools, and I've gotten a lot of value from working with Michael Rice's tools because I was ready for them, and I've stayed with them. And it is my own inner experience with truth as I use the tools. And I can hear the tools in Byron Katie. I can hear the tools in Guy Finley. I've gone to see him, you know, because I'm local to him in Oregon. And so it's everywhere. To me, there are capsules of truth everywhere, in every book, on every shelf, that they can be seen when you have eyes to see and ears to hear. And so I'm grateful for what has led me to seeing and hearing the same truth as Michael Rice teaches in the paragraphs of the Course of Love. And my main difficulty, I guess my own true why I called this that I have a hard time conveying to people in the Course in Miracle and in the Course of Love of how valuable the work is of Michael Rice. And Yeshua through Michael Rice. And what I've arrived at in my processing those upsets in myself and difficulties and challenges is that really I don't need to worry about and be concerned about other people's work. Everybody goes at their own pace, at their own level. I'm not even seeking enlightenment. I'm just seeking... I love revelations, and I love things clearing up in my life, and I love the forgiveness as taught, you know, as a process and as the way Yeshua did speak it to his disciples and the people of his time. So I'm just thriving on it and getting somewhere in my life, and I don't call it enlightenment except I feel wonderful when I do this, and you've heard me feel awful. You've seen me and witnessed me to not using the tools, not doing the work.
That's the best way to teach it is to just use the tools and have it improve your life, and then that's the modeling that is the only truly effective teaching. Way of Mastery will tell you over and over again, teach only love. How do you do that? You exist as that energy. You exemplify being in the world, understanding your true nature and living from that.
Yes.
So if you're having a hard time sharing with people how valuable these tools are, all that means is do some more of your own work. Because the more you do your work and you show up as this active presence of love that Dr. Rice talks about, that's all the teaching that's necessary.
Yeah, thank you. And that's just what I keep surrendering to and arriving at, is just do my own work. And so my preference is, the way I do my work best is how I've been doing it with Michael Rice so far. But I also acknowledge it doesn't have to be only that. I have flexibility and awareness, because it comes at me 100% of the time in the present moment. I can see the work and the truth everywhere. You know, why would I limit myself? So thank you for the red flag. I hope it was helpful to others also.
Don't worry about that. You. As long as it was useful for you, that's all that matters.
Okay.
All right.
By the
way, thank you for the call.
Hold on one second. I love to hear your laugh. And I love the other day, maybe a month ago, when you mentioned with Susan, you know, your old chuckles and laughter thing, because you guys were really fun when you were doing that. I loved that and just wanted to tell you. So
yeah, that originally came up with Michelle Pache. So that was that was the origin of that, was when Michelle was struggling, and then she made a breakthrough and started laughing. And so we were talking about, you know, how valuable it is to be able to see that we just take ourselves way too seriously in all this work in our lives. And, all right. So thank you for the call. Somebody else put a hand up. I will let them chime in. Thank you, Julie. And we have the number 484. Is this Ellen?
Yes, it is. Hi, Dr. Tim.
Welcome, Ellen. How can we support you today?
Well,
what are your thoughts?
It just amazes me how life synchronizes everything, and everything that you were talking about just, you know, synchronized with what I was experiencing this morning. I was reading some more of Byron Katie, and you know, I've studied many different teachings, and they all say we are not this personal self. And so I believe that, but whether or not I experience it is a real thing. So I was inspired to use Byron Katie's 4 questions on that very issue, that thought that I am this personal character who goes by the name of Ellen. And, you know, the first couple of questions are pretty easy, because, of course, I can't know that that's true. But when I got to the one that says, how would I feel without that thought, then I had the experience of such a relief, such a burden being lifted off of me. And I knew, because I had the experience, you know, I had like an awakening experience many years ago, and the one of the things that was so clear to me through that experience is that the truth always sets you free. The truth always sets me free. And so it became so simple that, well, how do I know if something's true? Is it binding me in some way, or is it setting me free? And so when I asked myself, you know, the question about who would I be without that thought, and I felt that freedom come in, then there it is. Okay, so now I know it's not just me believing what someone else is telling me through all these teachings. Now I know for myself, because I had that experience of how I feel without that thought. And so I just thought it was pretty amazing how that's exactly what you were talking about today. And so that is, I just wanted to share that, and that, you know, that's one of my ways of how do we know what is true? Well, how did it make me feel? Does it make me feel like I've got this burden? Because having this personal self that I, you know, like that you need to, like, take care of and maintain and worry about whether or not people like or don't like. And, I mean, letting go of that, all of that, is just, it's amazingly freeing. It's just amazing. And
well,
so I know it's not
tremendous,
true.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of energy that we expend, mental, emotional energy that we expend maintaining all of that and or questioning all of that and or refuting all of those thoughts about self and others and who's right and wrong and is this fair and should this happen and tremendous energy expenditure. So, of course, most of us are going to feel much better when we stop doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just saw that it really, nothing that this character does or doesn't do can hurt me nor harm me. I mean, it just, I'm just getting a lot of benefit from Byron Katie right now, going back and reading her work and applying those questions.
Glad to hear it. It is, it's a delight for all of us when any one of us starts to see through the false nature of our belief systems, because it is that liberation, that is that unburdening of, you know, that higher self that most people try to talk about with a capital S self. It's
mm-hmm.
It's like you said, it's just amazing. What if I'm not trapped in these negative thoughts? Then what? What if I don't spend the entire day beating myself up over something I did that I can clearly see wasn't in my best interest, but if I don't have a time machine and I can't go back to 10 minutes ago or 10 years ago, what is the benefit of me pouring mind energy into the, oh, darn, oh, I wish, or oh, I regret, zero?
Right, right. I just see that, I mean, everything is just happening, and I really can't take blame or credit for any of it. I mean, that's how I feel at this point. I just don't think it's possible to say that I am the one responsible for what this character has done or is going to do. And that, to me, just is so freeing. I can just see that there's really nothing to regret, nothing to feel guilty about, nothing to worry about. If I take that, you know, if I don't take all that on.
Right, and it frees me up to just be in, get into, appreciate the flow of creation, the flow of life. And you know, if I have that part of my mind that still wants to ask, well, is this good or is this bad? Is this necessary? Byron Katie's observation is, I can know it's necessary because it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it had to happen because it happened. And do I need it? Well, do I have it? Then I need it. If I don't have it, I don't need it. How can I know that I don't need to see? Well, because if my eyesight's going, I don't need it. How can I know that it's okay that somebody broke into my house and stole my prized possession? Well, because they did. That's how I know it's okay. Life is going to unfold in its way, and I don't get to create that. I do, however, whether I realize it or not, I create my experience of it.
Exactly.
I am constantly creating my experience of life by how I choose to interpret and respond to the events that unfold around me. That's one of the missing pieces that Michael Rice, you know, talks about in various ways and says, this has been hidden from us, that we are creators. This is the big tragedy that's been done to us, et cetera. He talks about it in various ways. But the essence of it is, if I've never been taught that my mind is a creative force, then I don't know. But once I've been shown that, and once I've been enlightened to the actuality that how I choose to interpret and respond to events is far more important than the events themselves, now I've got a very powerful tool for creating my experience of life. And I can either choose to use it actively and construct a healthier, happier, more joy-filled life, or not. And it's going to be okay either way, because life is just going to keep unfolding.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to recommend the book. I don't know if there's time, but it's called The Secret of Light. It's by Walter Russell, who is no longer with us. But I have found his work absolutely amazing because he got all these downloads from God. The way he explained it, like every 7 years, he'd go out into the wilderness for 3 days and get all these downloads, and he was shown exactly how creation works, how the universe works, and he set it all out in this book, The Secret of Light, the scientists have it all wrong, and this is the way it is. He has a whole new periodic table of elements and everything. There's a lot of this that I don't understand because I am not a scientist. But there's a lot of it that I found so beneficial in understanding, like, really gets into how our senses deceive us and explains exactly how that works. And there's just a lot of really interesting information in this book that I thought you might appreciate.
Okay. I will look into it. The Secret of Light.
Yes.
All right.
You'll enjoy it.
Appreciate the call as always. We're down to the last couple of minutes. And Jeannie Rice is here ready to take over, so I will mute you, Ellen. Thank you for your call, comments, and questions, as always. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are the energy of love expressing in form, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tian. I came in a little late, but...
Well,
what I heard was good.
Yeah, you just can't sleep. You know, you can't miss a single bit of any show. There's so much going on.
I know. I know.
Julie from Oregon, who's no longer in Ashland, and we heard about Course of Love, and we heard from Ellen, and so. So have a wonderful show, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Awesome. Thank you, Dr. Tim. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Thursday, March the 18th, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael just a moment to get dialed in. And yesterday we had, well, for the last few days, we've had some awesome conversations. And I'm thinking that Doug will call in today and maybe complete the conversation that started yesterday. And then I will combine the two shows and put them out as a special show to listen to. Tapped into a lot of really awesome things. And so hopefully he'll call in. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. We have this beautiful day happening here in Bristol, Virginia. Just had some good and hot thunderstorms. A few clouds in the sky. Sun's coming out. Temperature's about 50 degrees. Absolutely beautiful. And so we welcome you. And we're delighted that you're here to participate in this conversation. And I did text Doug, and he was going to call back in today. So we can pick up our conversation from yesterday where we were talking about integrity in relationships and the difference between problem solving and healing. And we do a workshop called Communication. Did you hear what I think I said? And Jeannie, maybe you could just let me know if Doug clicks in. Communication, did you hear what I think I said? And in that workshop, we point out that what most people want to do is just solve their problems. And that is, of course, somebody else is the problem here. And so if I could just give you the instructions to change, I wouldn't have to be an upset and disturbance. And then my problem would be solved. The insanity of that logic is that whatever that person is doing isn't the cause of your pain or disturbance. It's actually a call for you to heal your internally generated pain or disturbance. So what we suggest when we go into the steps in responsibility communication is that you first move toward healing, and then once you've done the healing work, or you've at least initiated the healing work, then, and oftentimes, of course, problem solving is appropriate, then step into the problem solving aspect of it. Do the healing first. So, Doug, I was just opening the space for our conversation to continue from yesterday. So delighted that you're here. What direction is your mind going this morning or this afternoon?
Well, I've been – let me just launch off of what you just said. I'm always have trouble knowing where to start and how to put my words together, but balance.
That's a thought.
Okay. Thanks.
I mean, I could change that thought, or I could stick with that and live my life by whatever I want to do.
I'm fully on board with the concept of, I mean, yesterday we talked about a lot of things, and I've been listening to that, thinking about it, and I feel like I'm fully on board with the idea that we want to function out of a enlightened or a truth-based mind, not one driven by our non-being, hidden, suppressed, unforgiven content that's creating realities in our consciousness that cause us to believe that someone else, some other thing, whatever, to go into denial, that our partner in particular is the cause of the problem in our life, and then driving us to leave or make other errant choices that only put us into a repeating why is this happening to me again downward spiral. But the question that arises for me is that we were discussing why you put I will never leave in the commitment, and what you just now said was
I didn't put that in the commitment. That's not in the commitment.
Okay.
Don't accuse me of that kind of stuff. I never put that in the commitment.
All right. We were discussing, I'll try and correct this, and you can correct me or help me correct it, that we were discussing and you were talking about how you put in there something about trying to break a pattern that you said you once had of leaving every time when there was a problem, something like that, that you would stay and be present love instead, something to that
effect. There it is. So,
okay.
So when I'm going to create something new out of an old pattern that I spot, what I have to do in order to actually create it is shift all of the thought disorders around the errant part of my mind. So if I had put in the commitment, well, I'm not going to leave again, guess what, what my mind energy is moving me in the direction of doing? I'm going to get up and leave again. What the commitment
okay.
says is I'm here. For you and with you. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep communication open and keep love conscious, active, and present as we heal, celebrate life, and grow together. That was my correction in my own mind to the whole generational pattern of leaving.
And that sounds powerful, 100% on the mark and perfect for me. And the thing that I was hearing you just now talking about, the difference between healing and problem solving and the need to heal first and then problem solve. And then I was, the question that's sort of in my mind is there ever, and we touched on this a little yesterday, and I think we concluded that the answer to the question is there ever an appropriate time to leave? Is if you can see that you are being nothing but constant, present, active love, then maybe it might be. Would that be correct?
Well, a more complete thought for me, the one that I offered yesterday, was that, you know, that's up to every individual to determine for themselves. For me,
whether
personally, what I found produced healing for me was to take leaving off the table. Whatever happens, I've taken leaving off the table. And, of course, everybody has to create their own standard for that. What am I going to do with it? And everybody has a right to say, enough is enough, and I'm out of here. But for me, where I saw my healing and why I put the language in the commitment that I put into the commitment was that this is what, seeing as how I'm a creator, this is what I'm going to create. I'm not going to buy into this game. Well, you know, they might be the problem, therefore. It's like, no, here's the result I'm committed to creating. Now, if I leave myself wiggle room, well, here's the result I'm committed to creating. If you fulfill my goals, I'm just right back in the same pattern of leaving. So for me, there was no condition. It's just, I'm here. That's it. I'm here.
So I want to be clear. My goal here is to make the software platform, to make sure the software platform for how I process and operate in my life is as accurate and as crisp as it can be. And in what I mean by that is I hear in the software platform that you've established as most productive for yourself, the arc of operating instructions include, I'm going to be here. I'm going to be here.
Yep.
And then it includes that for others, they have the opportunity to make that decision for themselves. I'm in agreement that we should never leave unless we've gotten to the point where we're sure we're not leaving for non-being content and sane reasons. But notice that
in that process of being a creator, what you're saying to yourself is, well, just in case I'm not a good enough creator to create the result I want, I'm going to leave this back door open. I can leave if I decide to, because now I'm in being and therefore I can leave. My offering is, if you're truly and totally in being, there's going to be so much healing happening around you, there'll be nowhere else to go.
My goal is to stay. My goal, however, is also to make sure.
Then close the back door.
I do not want to have what I do have. What I'm going to say what I want. I want to make sure that the operating system that I'm functioning under is as accurate as I can make it. And so when I look into this question, what I see, what comes to mind, for example, is that if I'm errant about this, in other words, it's like when you're in a relationship, you're binding yourself when you're committed, and you're saying I'm not going to leave.
I would never say I'm not going to leave, or I realize that I'd be pointing in the direction of leaving.
Okay, I'm going to stay. If you say I'm going to stay,
for
you
and with you. Keeping communication open. And keeping our conscious active and present.
So one could do all of that and still choose a different relationship, right? I mean, you stay conscious, active, committed for there with them, keep communication open.
Let's go back to Yeshua's original, what I consider to be the original instruction on how we create. If we go to the opening words in the book of John, go ahead.
Can I don't know that the reason why I'm inquiring into this is as clear as I'd like it to be. I'd like to make sure it is before we go into a solution.
Okay.
And is that my sense is that when we commit to someone, that they and we become bound together for life. And maybe for some people at least, circumstances are going to change and someone else would truly be the person that they could better fulfill their life purpose with. That's an open question for me. And I don't want to have a software program that would actually create more pain, suffering, or prevent growth if that's true for some people under some circumstances. And I'm thinking particularly of my partner now, who is divorced, because she was with someone who started and continued to increase in drinking and alcohol consumption and refused growth, wouldn't look into
distraction,
would not look into healing. And after 6 years of staying with that person, doing everything she could in her own personal growth, she decided to leave that person. And I think that was probably an appropriate choice, a higher path choice, not a lower path choice. And I think that in life, sometimes we get into a relationship with someone and then we find that we fulfill a purpose or we complete a mission with that individual, and maybe it's time to move, would better serve both of us to move to someone else. And I just want to clarify that question in my software, you know, in how I look at life. That's the purpose.
Okay. Okay. So here would be the bottom line of what I hear you saying. Let me decode in the context of creatorship. What I hear is
Thank
the bottom
you.
Line.
I
That's
am what I want.
Totally committed to you unless somebody better comes along. That's what you just said. Unless you become the bad guy and then I can be the good guy and proclaim it's time for me to leave.
I'm reluctant at this point to concede that is not an oversimplification of what I've said. I honestly feel like two people could arrive at a point where they feel like they would be better served to not stay in certain circumstances. And I'm looking into that question deeply with you. So that's
okay.
Maybe I'm in error. Maybe I'm in error, but.
Okay, let's go back to how creatorship works. I hear you. I hear you loud
okay.
and clear.
I feel
and,
heard.
So I'd like to shift to this whole conversation from the perspective of creatorship.
Great. Let's do it.
So here I am, a human, a created essence called love, a creator, with an instrument to express through a body-mind unit. My instrument has 1,000 generations of God only knows what in it. And if I just count 30 generations, this is as far back as I've gone in doing the math. If you do the math in 30 generations, there are 1.6 billion people in your bloodline. And I would suspect that for you or me or Jeannie or anybody else who's listening, if we went back and surveyed 1.6 billion people, we'd have people who've left and people who stayed and people who murdered and people who got murdered and people who abused and people who healed abuse and everything else we could imagine in terms of human joy, aliveness, creativity, suffering, pain, and trauma. Does that make sense?
A huge amount of pain, suffering, and trauma is in our biology. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah. Well, the good
okay.
stuff, too. We've got the positive side. I'm sure that in your bloodline and mine, there are people who came together in joy and aliveness and created wonderful, abundant, fruitful lives together. I'm sure there's that, too.
Sure. This is related to what you were saying yesterday about what's in our bones, what you saw.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And what I'm committed to healing if it has been locked in bone.
Right.
So it's all there. So person A meets person B, resonance, attraction, and they decide they're going to marry. And they create a marriage agreement, and their marriage agreement says, as long as this is working for me and you're fulfilling my goals and I'm fulfilling your goals and you like it and you're happy and I like it and I'm happy, we'll hang together. But if you don't fulfill my goals or I don't fulfill your goals and I become unhappy or unsatisfied, then I'm going to move in another direction. I'm going to break the commitment with you, and I'm going to go play with somebody else who's more attractive at the moment. So if that's the agreement, and if you remember that this body-mind unit has a major attribute, and its attribute is inertia. If you remember from physics class in high school, the definition of inertia is a body moving in a particular direction at a particular rate of speed will tend to continue to move in that direction at that rate of speed until it's acted upon by an outside force.
Right.
So if those two come together with their inertia-bound egos and all that history for both of them, and if the purpose of life is to truly heal us and the Creator has created a world where the law of resonance governs and we're going to be drawn to people who, number one, are going to give us the opportunity to heal and show us everything in us that needs healing, then if my commitment is, as long as I'm liking it and I'm happy with it and things are cool, I'm staying, otherwise I'm not. And if the propensity for action in carbon-based memory in the generations is, I'm out of here, and if it so happens that my partner has a matching bag of garbage, which is quite likely, I'm out of here, then probably when one or the other begins to do actions that bring up that which is less than love, one or both at some point will say, too much suffering caused by you, and that will be a lie. It will be, the real statement there would be, there's too much suffering happening in me that you're bringing up in me, therefore I think I can solve this by leaving, and so I'm out of here. And if you notice the suffering that maybe you left, and I'm not saying you as the individual here, I'm saying any of the generic you, anybody who's listening, the suffering that you left the last relationship for and the one before that and the one before that, it was all justified to leave because they caused so much suffering in you, right? But you'll notice that it's the same suffering today as the last time and the time before and the time before. Because that's what relationship does, is it brings up everything that's in need of healing. And until one or the other or both people in the relationship develop the skill of really truly honoring love more than they honor their trauma is not going to melt. It's going to tend to reinforce and exacerbate. And the thing that's going to tend to govern the creative process will be the unconscious dynamic of the creative process each person brings to the table, to the relationship. My offering, and I think you've heard the On Creating Consciously workshop before, is that what I choose to do is I choose to be a conscious creator and to clean up my unconscious. So if I want to know what conscious creatorship is about, if I go to the opening words in the book of John, you know, the Greeks tell us, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. In the Aramaic, that's not what it says at all. What it says is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. In other words, the preponderance of mind energy is going to run the creative process. Now, if I go into this relationship with, okay, let's create a relationship, and the mind energy I bring to it is, we want this wonderful, happy, holy, healthy, eternal relationship, but in my unconscious and the person who's probably got the matching bag of garbage, the person I'm marrying, in her unconscious is, yeah, and when they're going to get stuff, the tough go shopping and leave, then when that energy starts to come into the fray, I'm no longer a conscious creator, but I'm now an unconscious creator. those dynamics are going to play out if I make a true commitment to eternal relationship. They are going to play out. And when they begin to play out, if I put a clause in my creative process that, well, if this isn't going as well as I thought I would like it to, then I have the right to leave, then that clause is going to be invoked that I'm going to tend to find a reason to leave, because that's what so many generations have done. That's, the, you know, I mean, look at the culture. We're, what, 60% divorce rate. And so if I put the mind energy in of an addendum that says, and if the going gets tough, I can say, I'm out of here, then probably that's what's going to become active, because that seems to be the propensity of information about relationships in our whole culture. And, you know, if you look individually in your life and in your relationships and in her life and her relationships, that's what's played out. So I'd take that clause out of the creative process.
Okay. I can see why you would. And that seems appropriate. I mean, I understand the reasoning for that. What you just described in my mind is what happens almost all the time, what's going to happen all the time in relationships. And then I guess maybe I'm just willing to let this stop here and go, you know, and talk about something else. But but at the same time, I feel like once, to be sure that the software is correct, it suggests that irregardless of if you work through all those issues and you clear all those things, and then that there's no possibility that you'll find, my interpretation of anyway what I'm hearing, and I may be wrong even in how I'm hearing it, but is that this is suggesting that in the programming for the operating system for how I'm going to live my life, I have a position that says there is never a circumstance under which two people would find it truly would be to their both, for not the non-being reasons that you just described, that non-being process, but for reasons of truth, that there would never be a circumstance under which they would find that it would be better for them to stop being together in that relationship. That is, am I mishearing?
Totally, completely, 100%. Yes.
Okay.
Those words, those thoughts have not crossed my mind or entered into my creative process. I hear your mind injecting that, but that's
right,
not part of my conversation.
Okay.
What I said was, I'm here for you and with you, keeping communication open and keeping love conscious, active and present as we heal, celebrate life, and grow together. Now, if I put that other addendum in that you just injected, I now open the pathway for a whole different creative process to occur. I'm not really 100% committed to this creative process. I just put another, you know, escape route in. And if there's an escape route, my generational patterns say I'm going to create a situation where I'm going to feel like the escape route is worthwhile. Now, let me just offer the way that this has worked for me. You know, I lived in a world where, you know, the first time I was displeased, I was gone. That was it. I'm out of here. I lived my life that way for a long time. When I really started to teach the healing through relationships work that I do, I really got the power and the meaning of a truly committed relationship. And I entered into one with the person who you know. And
right,
that was an eternal commitment to me. And she decided that, you know, it was too much work to do this work, too much work to be on the road. And I want, you know, gee, you've trained me to do this work. I charge $80 an hour to work with people. You charge $600 an hour to work with people. Let's just go find ourselves a nice home in a nice city and make some good money and hunker down and have fun. It's like, well, no, actually, I have a commitment. You knew that when we met, and you joined in that commitment that we're going to take this to every mind on the planet. And her choice was no, and she left. And, you know, I actually, when she made that choice, I literally took 6 months off. I did nothing. I traveled nowhere. I hold up at heart. And I just did my work. I just cleaned up my mind, my pain, and my trauma around that. And a time period later, Jeannie and I connected and met, and we decided to marry and created an eternal commitment. And we've been together 16 years. And so here's how it's worked for me. You know, I had had that one in my past, and for me, I'd pretty much cleaned that up, but I drew somebody who had the leaving issue, which Jeannie has shared previously. And we went through many layers of that. There's a lot of abuse in her past, a lot in my past, and there have been some pretty crazy times between us. A lot of stuff coming up. And we kept going back to the commitment, and we kept doing our work individually and together. And layer by layer by layer, cleared out the drama and the trauma, and still had stuff to deal with, and still have stuff to deal with. And I'll just say that, you know, choosing to be a creator and to be here, period. And if you've been listening to the show, it's just the last few weeks that a whole new level of pure presence, pure delight and joy and intimacy has occurred for us, like beyond what I could have imagined. And, you know, for 16 years, we've worked through many, many, many layers. You know, if you listen to the show just a couple of weeks ago, Jeannie opened up and, you know, when she was 16, she got married to a man who was, you know, basically in regards to sexuality, functioned like an animal and was just horrific. And after 16 years of being together, she finally opened that file in her mind and shared. And I think she was a little bit shocked with herself after she did, that she shared all, you know, the details of what had happened. And we just moved the energy through that. And it's just created a whole new level of delight and joy and aliveness in this relationship that at times I think both of us, and I'll, you know, open the space for Jeannie to speak for herself, both of us wondered, are we ever going to get through this? I don't know, Jeannie, you have any thoughts there?
It definitely in the last couple of weeks has taken a different level of working through. But, yeah, there were times, and like you said, you know, leaving has always been my go-to. You know, when I feel like my back's against the wall, it's like I'm out of here. And I've repeated that throughout my life, and not just in relationships, you know, with formers or anything, but also, you know, when I was a young girl, the reason I left at 16 was to leave home. And so it's just making the commitment to stay. And
I was just going to say an important part of your healing that issue was to recognize that who you thought was your powered person wasn't your powered person, but with someone in your life that you deeply cherish but had a leaving issue. And that was a big piece for you to look at and process through.
Yeah.
But what I'm still struggling with, honestly, is the idea, even in hearing what Jeannie said, did not leaving serve you at points in your life? Did that not serve you?
Oh, yeah. If
Doug,
I
you're
actually,
looking for a doorway.
And, you know, and I don't know how, you know, to explain that except that there was physical danger. You know, it wasn't that we just disagreed with each other. He physically
right.
abused me every day that he was there. I don't think I would be alive today if I had stayed. But so, yes, anybody that's in a physical situation, they need to remove themselves. But, you know, if it's not, yeah. But then I had 50 years of work to do around it. So while I left the situation, it never left my mind what was going on for me. And I never talked about it. I mean, when I told Michael last week, that was the first time I had told anybody what all had physically been done to me.
That must have been an incredible burden to hold on to for yourself, with just yourself. And a great relief, I imagine. All right. I don't know.
So I'm gonna cycle back, and I think we beat the horse about as much as it needs to be beaten. I'm just gonna cycle back to me, the core principle of it is, if in fact, in the beginning is the mind energy becomes flesh, and we're talking about a literal thing that happens when we think a thought, the thought turns into a neuropeptide, the neuropeptide becomes a molecule in tissue, then for me, I want to be really clear about what molecules I want in my tissue. Do I want molecules of, well, if it doesn't work out, if we decide that it would be better for us to split, do I want those molecules in my structure? Thank you. As a creator, if I'm truly committed to a certain goal, I don't want one molecule that goes against that goal in my structure. I don't want one thought that goes against that. I want to make sure that everything is consistent and on target for what I'm truly committed to creating. And if I'm not committed to creating that, if I'm not committed to dealing with what I need to deal with in me, my mind, I would offer, is going to give me excuses for, well, I better put a little addendum in here and there just in case.
All right.
And I support your thinking in terms of stepping up as a creator to create what it is you're going to create.
Right.
And eradicate every other molecule. Forgive every other molecule from your structure, right down to your genetic toes.
Yes. Okay. All right. So for me, looking into those genetic thoughts and molecules about leaving and about everything else I'm loving is the priority. What needs to be done.
Are you breathing?
Yeah, I was just noticing
good.
That. I took that breath.
Doesn't sound like it from here.
It doesn't? It does.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, perhaps there's nothing else that's pushing into my mind at the moment other than I am curious about if you want to express a little more about what sounded like something I hadn't heard before you speak before yesterday that intrigued me
mm-hmm.
about how once it's unrelated to my immediate issue, but how
right.
once we get to the point of being able to stop our minds from generating these images through forgiveness process, generating these drama images that
construct.
Then we can go directly
mm-hmm.
to the process root content healing. That
right.
I'd be interested in hearing you expand on a little bit if you want to. Otherwise.
Sure. Actually, we ended up, this was a part of the conversation, our intensive last night. We kind of extended that conversation a little bit further. And I'm just speaking, and the key to this one for me, as I'm beginning to understand it, and I'm not saying I understand it fully at this point, the necessary component is that I take the time to function as a human being rather than a human doing, and I cultivate my relationship with conscious, active, present love so that my physiology is fueled by love, which is what I believe it was designed to do. When I watch our granddaughter from the day she came into the world in the pure presence of being in love that she is, I've realized in interaction with her, and she's now 29 months encircling the earth, I realized that my job as a father with my kids and I didn't do as well at this as I wish I had. I have some understanding of it, but not the understanding I have now. But I've learned that my job as her grandfather is for me to have cultivated the presence of love in me so that I stand in the room with her as the presence of love. And that my awareness of her comes through that so that I see only her being as the presence of love. And by resonating with that, help to draw her true being into this form that was created out of the genetics of what we call her mother and her father, our son and daughter-in-law. And what the world tends to do once one of those forms is created is they tend to fall, especially the people who are genetically attuned and connected with her, will tend to be to play out of the genetics. You know, if she's got hostility in her genes, plays out, and I'm genetically connected, I've got some of the same hostility, it's going to tend to resonate in me. Now, I'm going to do one of two things if she does something that resonates the genetic hostility in me, is I'm going to stop and go, oh, wait a minute now, my job as her grandfather is to be the presence of love, and this sure isn't love, so I'm going to forgive this frustration or anger or sadness or grief or rage that's moving in me so that I can be restored to the presence of love with her and hold the space for whatever it is that's moving in her to process out, rather than getting lost in it, reinforcing it, and making that part of the foundation of her personality. That I'm going to stand in that space, identifying her as that, and literally like I'm, you know, just kind of a metaphor for it, like I'm offering the being that Arya Rain is as love, a hand to step into a form that isn't totally in alignment with that. And to support her throwing off what isn't totally in alignment with that and really holding that hand out every instant we're together to bring her as created love into this world. So what I realize is, you know, and I mean, it wasn't necessarily conscious in the early days, but what I realize is it's about really cultivating a relationship with the true being that you are, which is a reflection of or an aspect of or created by the Creator. And, you know, and then I think what that triggers in me is I go back to, you know, the Jewish traditions, which, you know, being in the Christian tradition, I've had some education in, and I hear them talking about, you know, and the way the world tends to talk about is what you're not going to do. You know, it's the Sabbath. You're not supposed to work. You're not supposed to, you know, I mean, there's some, you know, Jewish circles in which they go so far as it's work to turn on a light. You can't even turn on a light switch on the Sabbath because that's work. It's all about what you can't do. But I now understand and hear that as what they were saying is you need to dedicate a significant part of your life to cultivating your relationship with love, the relationship with the true being that you are and the Creator. And when that becomes fully fledged in you, and I'm kind of making that up as a statement, but I'll use that at this point. When that becomes fully fledged in you, what I'm observing is something happens. And what happens is if there are traumas, if there are unresolved issues in you, the normal way people deal with it is they go through their lives, somebody gives them the look, their mind generates a trauma-based construct, and the trauma-based construct might look like, oh, they looked at me just like my father used to look at me, and they made those nasty statements about me and told me how bad I was, and I'll never be any good, and I'll never be worthy. And so now my mind has got this whole perceptual construct about generational patterns and not being good and not being worthy, and now I'm going to try to work through all the aspects of that and fix it, figure it out. Forgiveness collapses that sort of thing and gives us a chance to return to the presence of love. What I'm starting to comprehend is that if I have deeply and strongly enough cultivated my relationship with love so as to function out of love and have love fully present in me, that has a disabling effect on carbon-based memory and its ability to generate perceptual constructs that can become very convoluted. You know, it's like the octopus. There's an arm heading in every direction, and trying to handle all of that becomes very complex and difficult. If I've deeply enough, and again, this is an awareness that's just come for me personally in my process after 50 years of realizing that if I've cultivated that and it is deeply present in me, then my mind can't generate those pain-based perceptual constructs. It's like I get to pass the complexities and all the hanging shads, the octopus arms, of those pain-based generational constructs of my mind, perceptual structures. I get to bypass that, and I get to step into directly processing the energy that lies beneath that. So rather than all the stuff my mind has made up out of that, you know, put down that happened when I was 5 years of age and I've been working with for 50 years, you know, rather than having to deal with that whole big construct in my mind that just gets more and more complex and more resistant, when I have that deep enough awareness of, connection with, and honor for the presence of love in me, all of those constructs are bypassed, and I can just go back and process the actual original energy of the offense that happened. And I'm just learning to speak about it, so that would be my, you know, next week I may have totally new languaging for it, but that would be my languaging at this point.
All right, that sounds like the next level of forgiveness process in a way. It's like a constant ability to bypass dissociation from non-being content and just be able to bring it immediately to the altar of love and remove it.
Right. The root energy behind it, rather than having to work through all the constructs that come from it. That would be the difference. And then, and I brought this up in last night's intensive, a new piece of the puzzle came, and for anybody that was in the intensive last night, thank you for the support as we processed that, and afterward I got another whole new piece of that puzzle for me. And so what I brought up was a simple offhanded remark or comment that was made 40 years ago. You know, I've talked about gnawing on things with this work. Well, this is a single sentence that was spoken 40 years ago as we were working on the Kabbalah's manuscript that I have gnawed on from time to time. And I finally got the gift. You know, they talk about wrestling with angels. Well, I finally got the gift from that last night after the intensive. And I talked about, you know, you've heard me speak of Dan McDougall before. We worked for years on the Kabbalah's manuscript together. You have. So Dan and I used to spend 2, 3, 4 hours a day on the phone. You know, he was in Albany, Georgia. I was in Theodosia. And, I mean, my phone bills used to be $1,000, $1,500, $1,800. We would spend hours processing around this translation work. And we were in the middle of working on it. I don't even remember what it was we were working on in particular, but Dan came up with a translation of one line, and I don't even know where that line is. I don't know what it is at this point. It was just this sentence that came up in the middle of our conversation. And because we were working on other things, we never went back to it, and I never really, you know, got to look any deeper. But and the line was that there's a point in one of the passages. Remember, we've talked about Rachma as a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain, and Kubha as the filter in the back of the brain. And the line that Dan came up with was, and what Yeshua said here was, let my Kubha be upon them. So it was that when this filter over perceptions keyed to love is active, there's an extension of energy to those around us. You've heard me speak about, you know, keeping love conscious, active, and present, and that's what creates healing.
Right.
So that came up for me in the conversation last night in the intensive as a result of interacting with the people in the intensive. And then, you know, when we were close to the end of the intensive, so we closed it out. And so I'm sitting and I'm just breathing and kind of being with that. And what I realized is, oh, okay, I finally get it. If Kubha, this filter over the back of the brain, the perceptual part of the brain that's key to love, is fully active, then every bit of energy moving in me, everything that's resonating in me, every brain cell that's firing in me has to be keyed to love. And, you know, when you think about when you realize that, you know, you look out and you see a forest filled with trees, the truth is you're not seeing what's out there. Your brain is creating a replica of the brain cells that are built of this forest filled with trees. That's a picture that's generated. That's a construct of mind that's generated from within. So what became clear to me last night, what I got the taste of was, oh, okay, so now I get it. Let my Kubha be upon them. Is that if everything that's firing in me is literally keyed to love, then the energy wave synthesized by that energy moving in me, that high energy wave that leaves my mind, is going to be a wave that is totally and completely in resonance with love. And remember, Marcel Vogel was able to measure those high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. So truly, if everything in me is in harmony, Kubha is truly active. Of course, Rachma has to be present too. Then I'm going to literally be able to radiate an actual energy wave that is sourced in love from and through me, and touch others with it. And you've heard, and these pieces never fell together until just last night, and they're even getting clearer now. You know, you've heard me before say that 25 years ago, I realized that the key to healing was there one person in the space that could hold love, conscious, active, and present, when something less than love was coming up.
Right.
If we can do that for ourselves and for each other, there's where the healing is. Well, I believe I'm now understanding what it meant is let, you know, Yeshua saying, let my Kubha be upon them, that's where the healing, that's the hem of Yeshua's garment that the woman who had the issue of blood needed to touch.
Exactly my thought. Exactly before you said it.
That was it. And you'll notice that he didn't say, I'm the hero who fixed your issue of blood. He says, it was you reaching to receive that. Yes, I was there as the support, but it was you reaching to receive that, being ready. You had prepared yourself for the healing that you just received. You know, in that story, the Greeks translated as there was a throng of people around him. I don't know how many people there are in a throng in the Aramaic language or whatever the Greeks translated that as. But, you know, it could have been, you know, 2, 10, 20, 50, 100. It might have been the 5,000. I don't know. But there's only one person who got the healing. And that was the one person who was, through resonance, ready to receive that energy, which they called the hem of his garment, the radiant frequency of active present love. And that was enough to vitalize and boost her through what she was willing to process. And this really horrendous affliction for a woman in that day and age. I mean, she couldn't even go into the kitchen and feed her family for 12 years, which is her sacred duty. But because she's unclean for this issue of blood, she can't do that. So it's a big, it's a major deal. And she's the only one in the throng that heals. And to me, it just reinforces that, you know, the reason for me to do my work is to make myself ready for that. And as I do my work, for instance, with my granddaughter, what I'm really doing is extending the hem of my garment to her continuously, whatever she does. I mean, we're blessed. She's so easy. She's such a sweet creature. And like kids do, she does stuff. And I realize that when she does stuff and it brings up something in me, my job is to clean that up in me that fast, to have the skill, to have developed the ability to clean it up that fast. And I'd offer that your job in your relationship is to do exactly the same. That's the job that each of us has. And we
That's
do that.
Great.
We transform everything.
Yeah, it seems to me that that premise, that principle could be why a being could be born into this planet and just immediately be acting as the presence of love continuously throughout their entire life as Christ. It's like it's
what we're designed for.
It's yummy, yummy, yummy.
Yep. And it's my job at this point as her grandfather specifically, and I'm willing to be on the support team of every child that comes into the world, but at this point it's my job to be in that space with her to make sure that the hem of my garment, that love is present in every fiber of my being continuously to create that support platform for her.
Thank you very, very much for the conversation today and yesterday and for all the amazing work having love present. And I want to invite anybody who's been listening that may have some comment or thought for me to send it to Jeannie, who can forward it to me. And I'm very grateful for the time and especially for this evolution in the work that's coming forward that you're expressing about today. That's just very, very delicious.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you've been gnawing on the work for a long time as well. And it's a matter of, you know, together we can do this. Together we can pull this together. And it takes each individual. You know, the realm of questioning that you've developed because of your challenges becomes the gift to this work because the thoughts and directions I might never think of going. And so, you know, together we get to open those spaces and the beauty of each individual that comes to this work. You know, you may have heard me say this before or may not, but there's a story that's told about Einstein, and they said to him, if you were given a challenge, a task to complete, and you had to complete it in 1 hour or you would die, what would you do? And what he said was, I would spend 55 minutes of the hour asking questions until I knew what the right question was, and then in 5 minutes, I'd have it solved. And to me, that's what this radio show is about, is every person, you know, I mean, this whole conversation today was started by a young woman who called in from Arizona 2 days ago and, you know, just opened a whole different space that's determined the direction that the show has gone in, and I think probably been a home run for everybody who's listening. And certainly for me. And so this one will be another one. The last 2 days' shows Jeannie's put up as special shows in the separate archives, and this will be still another, and we'll probably mark these 3 days while I think about it, Jeannie, as being part of the next time we do a Healing Through Relationships intensive. So thank you, Doug, for your gnawing and your questioning mine and the work you have done and the work you're willing to do and as we move it forward.
All right. We'll move it forward. Thank you.
Yay. All right. Well, any other thoughts for you? We're down to about 6 minutes. Go for it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I'm ready to lay down and let the, you know, invite.
Connect in. Yeah, I'm with you.
Love
I'm with
to
you. And, you know, the world says there's so much for us to do that we, you know, we haven't got time for that. We need to go out and get busy and get things done. And we become human doings, and it's time for us to spend time in being. You know, when everybody hears the result of living and being, they go, oh, yeah, I want that, I want that, I want that. Oh, wait a minute. You mean you actually want me to engage in some different thoughts and to do things differently? No. I want to keep doing what I've been doing. I just want that. And it's like, nah, you can't have it. You've got to do what it takes. And of course, the next statement, once somebody goes, oh, I can really have that, hooray, I want it yesterday. Well, it was the same 2,000 years ago, and the response was, you can't storm the gates to the kingdom. You got to do your work. It's just, you know, it's not some thing we get knighted with. It's what we produce when we do the work of, once again, truly becoming human in a world where there's very little human life. We have what we call human forms, but finding a human life in there, find someone who, especially when the stress is up and the chips are down, who really truly believes in God. And what that means is, to me, you know, not in the old religious concept of believes in God, but what that means to me is someone who, when the stress is up and the chips are down, their first order of business is to turn to love rather than hostility and fear. That's someone who has a relationship with God. Anybody who talks about God and, oh, you know, I love God and but when the stress is up and the chips are down, I turn to my rage and my fear and my hatred and my vengeance and getting even and winning. And the person's got to stop kidding themselves if they have any interest in a relationship with love, because their gods are already established and their gods are hateful and rageful and traumatizing. And the forgiveness work is about giving up those gods, those things we've been taught to rely on, those power person dynamics, and reawaken to the truth of who we are.
I like the statement you today, honoring love more than trauma.
Yeah. That's it. And honor means take love into action toward love. Take your being into action. And so when I take time every day to be with the presence of love, somebody might say, but you're not doing anything. Well, actually, I'm doing the most important thing I could possibly do. So thank you, Doug, for your thinking and your questions and the space we've come to. And we're down to the last minute or so. So I'm just going to invite everybody to, once again, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. It's a gift we're each designed to give. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.
whyagain.org.